2, 1, 2.
Welcome back to the second hour of the KFPK Outdoor Show. I'm Bob Sims on a rainy Saturday. Nice to have you along. Saturdays 5 to 8 on KFPK, 1530 AM and 93.1 FM. Rob Reimers of Rustic Rob's Guide Service is on the phone. We hear he has a scratchy connection. Are you with us, Rob?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, it's pretty good now.
Yeah, well, I get kind of spotty service up here where I'm living now.
Yeah.
But
out in the boonies,
man, I tell you what, this week has been a great week because everything's just busted wide open. You know, I've had a pretty good week on the Sacramento River fishing for sturgeon, and also the last time I was out, we had a young man with us, so I brought some minnows, and we threw a couple rods out with a minnow on, and we just knocked the heck out of the stripers.
That's good.
You know, I mean, he had a ball. You know, I was kind of worried about him because these guys are bringing this little six-year-old kid sturgeon fishing. You know, they get pretty bored pretty fast, but he had a ball with them stripers.
That's great. I mean, what were they, like the 3 to 5 pounds?
Yeah, actually, where I was, it seemed like about three-quarters of them were those 17-and-a-half inchers. So we were getting a few bigger ones.
Yeah.
He hooked one where, man, it just started screaming the line off the reel, and his eyes got about as big as grapefruits, and he wound up losing that one. But it was a lot of fun.
You just created a lifelong fisherman right there.
Oh, yeah. His dad's, oh, man, we're coming back in another week or so going striper fishing. I go, that's great. But, yeah, I think this week is going to be, in fact, tonight I'm going out on a trip, and I think this may be my last sturgeon trip because the Feather River is just busted wide open with stripers. You know, those releases they had out of Bullers and now Orville plus a range, you know, it's really brought the river up a lot, and it just pulled the striper up there. I mean, the Sacramento River is so warm. It was like 64 degrees the last time I was out, and the cool water coming down the Feather River is really pulling a lot of fish up there.
I mean, you say this is your last sturgeon trip. You mean until the water clears up?
No, I think it's going to be my last one for the year because, you know, I got a lot to do to my boat to change it back and forth from striper fishing to sturgeon fishing.
Uh-huh.
And once the stripers get here, I like to try to just switch over to stripers. Because, you know, it's just too hard to go striper fishing, you know, like, say, this morning, and then change my boat all around and go sturgeon fishing tonight and change it back around in the middle of the night for striper fishing tomorrow.
Yeah,
so,
okay, I got it.
You know, I kind of got to pick one or the other. It's just too hard to try to do both. But, you know, I mean, the sturgeon are still over there. If you like a sturgeon fish, it's going to be some good fishing over there for a while.
I think so. And I think that as soon as this river clears up, I mean, look at the stripers you got. And we have another report. Somebody was down earlier in the week catching stripers on both minnows and cut bait up in your neck of the woods there. And so when this river clears up, my goodness, I can't imagine. It's going to be loaded with fish.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was really expecting not to see much of anything on the Feather, and not that great of a striper year on the Sacramento River, but these March rains we've had and whatnot have just really, really turned things around. It's a lot more like it was last year than what I thought it was going to be.
Okay. Well, we'll see what the transition is between this week and next week, Rob, huh?
Yeah, I got a feeling we're going to be bouncing back and forth from the Sacramento to the Feather for a while. But, you know, when you get as many fish up here on the Feather this early, that means we're going to have a great striper season.
Yeah, I hope so. Okay, thank you. We'll talk to you next week.
All righty.
Bye. Bye. Rob Reimers, Rustic Rob's Guide Service. Book a trip, 530-632-0051. You know, today is the opening day of salmon season in Monterey, and the Pacific Fisheries Management Council is working hard on the regulations, and also there was a release up to Sacramento. I talked to John McManus of the Golden Gate Salmon Association last night about it. John, we had some good news from Battle Creek, which is not exactly the bearer of glad tidings the last couple of years. Tell us what happened this week.
Well, actually, the Coleman Fish Hatchery, which is located up on Battle Creek,
move to release most of its fall run juvenile salmon into the river today to take advantage of this big storm event that's going on. And well, I think we want to applaud those guys for being nimble and looking up at the sky, seeing there was a bunch of water coming and stepping on the gas to prepare to release those fish. They produced about 6 million fish this year. Normally they'd produce over 12 million, but they just didn't get the eggs last year because of the drought. But with the small production that they have, they're releasing about 4 million into the Upper Sacramento River today. And I think we'll see the rest go in the next couple of weeks.
Well, you know, whenever we're able to do this, we always seem to have a bump or a spike in the returns 3 years later. When we can put those babies in with high muddy water conditions, a whole lot more survive, huh?
Yeah, this is excellent. I think we'll get really good survival out of this, and I applaud the folks up there at Coleman for being nimble.
Yeah. Well, you know, and here again, it's kind of a backhanded compliment, but what was it, about 10 days ago, Orville was going to release some salmon, and what was it, Department of Fish and Wildlife requested from the Department of Water Resources to bump up some flows, and they originally declined?
They did, and then they came back to the table, and they found a way to do it. We'd like to applaud that behavior from the Department of Water Resources. We're going to need more of it in the future when we don't have wet years.
Yeah, I know. And you know, it's a sad state of affairs to think of these federal and state agencies that don't do everything they can to help the salmon. And it just shows you how much of a priority the water deliveries are and how little a priority the salmon are. But you're right. We have to applaud them when they do it. And if we can show them proof of their efforts, and hopefully it'll help us in the future, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in this year's release of spring run from the Feather River Hatchery was a really small group of fish. Again, hammered by the drought, they really needed the help. So I guess DWR, Department of Water Resources, hopefully appreciated that. What we know is they acted on it, and we're very thankful for that.
Yeah. So that's two pieces of good news for two rivers. Now, I know that the salmon season starts tomorrow down south of Pigeon Point, in other words, the Monterey area. But when is the Pacific Fisheries Management Council going to have final word on the rest of the seasons?
You know, I'm not sure if it's going to be next Tuesday or next Wednesday, but we will know next week sometime what the rest of the seasons are going to look like up and down the coast.
Okay. I guess we're not expecting too much, huh, John?
I don't know about that. If we discover there's a pretty good bite down there in Monterey, for instance, on this opener, I won't be surprised. But we'll see. And elsewhere on the coast, we're going to be delayed, that's for sure, because of the low forecast of fish out there. But even that, I mean, we'll find out once we get out there whether the low forecast bears out or whether it's better than they thought.
That's John McManus, the Golden Gate Salmon Association. We will find out. I'm kind of a little leery of this, but maybe if they do well in Monterey over the next few, maybe not today, but in the next few days, it might influence their decision. So we'll be back with Scott Laceth right after this break. Welcome back. Mr. Scott Laceth of Sporting Chef and Dead Meat fame joins us now. Good morning. Have you had a nice rest?
Good morning. Yes. Good morning. Well rested. Thanks for asking.
I don't know how you do it at your age.
You know, I'm questioning that myself because the rest of my year is pretty full.
I keep reminding you, you know, it seems like each year in the last three or four, you have explain to us how you're going to cut back.
You know, here's what happens. People offer you money to do things. And so I do it. At some point, nobody will care, and then I can stay home and fish and hunt more.
Yeah.
But I have been spending some time with my new dogs, Mac and Floyd, with Steve Rambo. Do you know Steve Rambo?
Well, that sounds familiar, but
He guides out at Rojas's.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I know Steve.
Good guy. And yeah. He's got a guide service, waterfowl and all that kind of good stuff, too. So he's helped me get my dogs trained. I saw him at the ISC show in Sacramento, and so he's kindly given his time. We're out. We'll be showing how the dogs progress. You know, I started training them at 10 months, which is late. You know, normally I want to have dogs hunting in the field by 6 months.
Uh-huh.
And, so we're playing catch up, but they'll be fine.
Yeah, well, you know, what the heck? At least you got around to it finally, right?
No, they're catching up fine. Just the difference between day one and day three, I think you'll see when we post it. It's pretty crazy how much better they're getting. But I wanted to talk today about turkeys, which is, it seems appropriate. And this is something that we've talked about a lot, in that people breast out their wild turkeys and then they toss the rest of the bird away. And that is a gigantic waste of wild turkey.
Hmm.
A lot of us don't take the time to pluck them, and really plucking them is not all that hard. Some people hang them by the feet, some people hang them by the neck, but it gives you a lot easier to get to the parts, cut the wings off, cut the ends of the legs off, and then you just start plucking in the direction that gives the least resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And having that turkey skin on there is going to give you a better turkey when you cook it, as long as the turkey is crisp. But after you remove the breast, if you take the rest of that body, and as we've said many, many times, you take the legs and thighs and you can cook them very slow. They're best cooked low and slow. I'll take the thighs and rub them with olive oil, favorite seasoning, brown them, and then put them into a roasting pan with about an inch of either chicken stock or chicken stock and white wine and some celery, carrot, onion covered up with foil. 300 degrees in about 4 hours. It's going to be really, really tender. If it's not, just make sure it's got a little liquid in there and keep cooking it until it's tender. It will happen. Everything else that you can't cook that way, you roast it with some celery, carrot, onion parts that you'd normally throw away. Put it into a stock pot with some cold water and make wild turkey stock. It kills me when people, instead of making stock out of their birds, they use a bouillon cube or a can of broth. Mm-hmm. When the better broth is on the bird they brought home. So, you know, one of my favorites is I make a wild turkey and wild rice soup, and that's on the Sporting Chef website, which is back in business.
Oh, good.
And it's very simple. I mean, you know, if you take vegetables and you saute them, and then saute them in butter and then sprinkle a little bit of flour over them while they're cooking, that's going to help thicken it. Then you can just kind of build from there with mushrooms, milk, turkey stock, and then you throw the shredded turkey meat in there that came off the thighs, and you have a really rich, really fast wild turkey soup. Tons of other recipes. The whole point is, do not throw away perfectly good turkey parts.
That's a good tip. Well, the flavor of a wild turkey, I've heard so many different things over the years. You know, you take care of that, but it's a great flavor.
It really is. And people complain that the breasts are dry, and the breasts are only dry because you've overcooked them. It's not chicken, or it's not domestic turkeys. They don't cook it like domestic turkey. If you butterfly the breast so that it's not quite as thick, it's a lot easier to control the temperature. And if you take the breasts and you butterfly them and stuff them and wrap them, stuff them with cheese and bacon and all sorts of good stuff too, that makes for a really good moist wild turkey breast. But if the wild turkey, you know, an older bird is going to be a little drier than a young bird, but still a little moist heat, don't overcook it. That breast will be really, really tender.
Okay. That's a great tip, Scott. Next week it is? You're not gone next week, are you?
No, I'm via Nashville. Well, I will be calling from Nashville next week.
Okay. Thank you. Have a good week, and good luck in your dog training.
I will. We'll keep you all posted.
Thanks, Scott.
See you, man.
Bye. Scott Lasoff, thesportingchef.com. Okay. I talked to Richie Height of Paulina Peak Tackle. He was up at Bullard's Bar with Gary Coe last Wednesday. Richie, I hear you took poor old Gary Coe up to Bullard's Bar Reservoir, teach him how to catch some kokanee up there. Well, it was this week, wasn't it?
Yeah, we were there on Wednesday.
And how was it?
It was pretty good. The bite, I think, was off a little bit. I don't know if right before this front it was coming in. We struggled. You know, we ended up with 13 fish, up to about 14 inches. We had got some pretty nice fish.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I mean, for years and years and years, a 14-inch fish out of Buller's Bar was a trophy.
Right. Yep.
Well, what were the water conditions like? Has it been getting runoff? Was the lake going up fast? Was it off color? What was it?
It has come up a lot. I would say it's probably came up at least 20 feet in the last month, just by looking at the level on the dock or on the ramp there. There's a lot of debris, surface debris, but the water clarity isn't bad. I was impressed with how clear the water was for as much rain as we've gotten.
Well, that's a pretty rocky drainage that feeds into that, so that's one good thing.
Exactly. Yep. Who knows what this storm's going to do to it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're going to find out soon enough, right, Richie?
Exactly.
So how deep did you have to fish for them?
You know, they were scattered, and it's all a temperature thing. They can live pretty much anywhere they want. We caught them from right on the surface, top lining, down to 40 feet, and there was not any particular spot that was better than the other.
You just had to cover the water column.
Yep, yep.
Okay, what worked best?
It seemed to be any of the brighter colors. You know, bright pinks, bright oranges. Earlier in the morning, we did catch some stuff on darker stuff, but after the sun was up, it was all, everything was bright colored. And, you know, our hammered dodgers with the moon jelly and pink stripe, that seemed to be probably the best once the sun got up.
That's Richie Hyde of Paulina Peak Tackle, an early bite there. But anyway, just here we have water coming in. He's up there catching kokanee. What are you going to do, huh? Anyway, it's interesting. Go to PaulinaPeakTackle.com and find out and look at some of these things because they're really good. And a little history on the area. You know, Buller's Bar, it's an old gold rush town, right? I mean, that whole area was just basically the gold rush literally built it. And it was a Dr. Bullard from Boston, New York, that made a strike there that town was named after. I mean, in 1850, I think it was. And then not too far away is Camptonville. Now, Camptonville was, you know, a great gold rush town, and a guy named Lester Pelton went there in 1850, and through failed efforts in gold mining in 1864, he was a millwright and a carpenter in some of the gold mines, and everything in the mines were used by was powered by water power, water wheels, and he eventually developed and got patent in 1880 a more efficient water wheel that's still in use today around the world called the Pelton water wheel, and that was invented in Camptonville, up on Highway 49, the back road to Bullard's Bar Reservoir. And you could even go one more and you go to North San Juan, which was named by somebody that was in the, we don't have time for that story, so I'll have to continue it later. But after the break, we will talk to Clyde Wands about what's going on striper trolling before all these rains hit. I think they were catching fish right up to Thursday evening, so don't go away. Welcome back. Before we talk to Clyde, just to finish that story, North San Juan, another great gold mining town, established basically in 1853. One of the discoverers was Christian, I think it's Kintz. He was a veteran of the Mexican War. you know, John Fremont and Colonel Kearney in the 1840s, and the hill next to North San Juan reminded him of the San Juan de Ulloa in Mexico. Now, I'm not sure, but I think it's the same San Juan Hill that Teddy Roosevelt was involved in. But anyway, maybe not. But that's how North San Juan got its name, and that's how Camptonville made its claim to fame with the Pelton Wheel, and all that's right next to Bullard's Bar, which was just a mining claim on the river. Now let's talk to our friend Clyde Wands, the old-timer. Hi, Clyde.
Good morning, Bob.
You sound like the rivers are muddy.
Well, yeah, that is, but yeah, we were out a couple times this week, and, you know, the Sacramento on Tuesday was clearer than the San Joaquin.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yeah, we started out on the shallow troll, started from Toland's Landing, going to work the whole way up. We were into fish. We couldn't land them. My friend lost three in a row. I got up the upper end, and I lost a nice big one. Then I caught a six-pounder, and that's the best we could do. So I said, hey, these fish we couldn't find anymore. So we ran the San Joaquin, and not much over there. I think we caught a couple small keepers. So we went back to the other side, and a friend of mine was over there, and he had a 10-pounder and a couple others. He was getting them every troll. This was outside of Decker, deep troll. We couldn't get hooked up. So, you know, then I'd talk to you on the phone, getting a little disgusted.
Yeah.
He left at about 1 o'clock. Man, my screen lit up. We were into doubles, and these were nice fish. We got eight patterns, you know, nice size.
Yeah.
A couple sevens. This lasted for about an hour. So, you know, you stick it out
a little while,
and this was the end of the outgo, right at the bottom of the outgo.
And was this at Decker?
This was at Decker.
Okay.
This was all deep troll.
Hmm.
And I didn't fish Wednesday, but there is a lot of bigger fish showing up this year. Bigger, you know, than I've seen in a long time. I got a picture on my, somebody sent me a picture. What was a friend Joe that sent it? John Guide, I think he was alone. He caught one. He said at least 30 pounds. The picture looked awful big. I mean, it looked over 30. So there's some bigger ones showing up. Thursday we went out, and I couldn't catch a fish over. Our best fish was 22 inches that day. We caught keepers, but I lost a big one. I'm not sure. I could have been into a sturgeon, but it didn't act like that. What had happened? We went back over in the San Joaquin. I was going to wait for the tide to turn, you know, to go back over the sack. And we had two or three doubles. Well, one of the doubles, the smaller fish went down the line, and I hooked this big one. I don't know if it was a sturgeon, but it was pulling the boat around. And we have a tangle.
That's always a good sign. That's a good fish when it pulls your boat.
Yeah. But anyway, I think our friend, the guy had out, I think he tightened the drag a little on his.
Yeah.
Well, when the fish come loose, we pulled up, and his hook went down and hooked onto the one I had on the fish. And this fish was pulling my boat around. It was pretty exciting for a while. I don't know what it was. You know, we never got to see it, but it was big. So anyway, we went back over the sack, and we just couldn't catch a fish over 22 inches. I mean, we caught a lot of keepers. We have a lot of doubles.
Yeah, well, that's all a good sign, but now we got a muddy river, and you can only think when things clear up, we got a good chance of having some great fishing.
I think so, Bob,
yeah.
And I'm going to head south. I'm still going out Tuesday, and there was one boat. They were catching a lot of fish on the west bank. That was Thursday. I only seen one boat. One of the guys, Scott Feist, he had some decent fish. Nothing real big, probably 6-8 pounds. But most of the fish I seen were. It just seemed like a bunch of smaller fish moved in.
Yeah. Well, let's see what develops this week, because it's going to be a question mark. I'll be curious to see how you do Tuesday, Clyde. We'll get a whole new picture next Saturday.
Okay. We'll see what happens.
Thank you, Clyde. Good luck.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Clyde Wands, the old timer. No, you're not going to keep him from going out. I talked to Mike Searcy at Johnson's Bait and Tackle in Yuba City. A nice surprise, stripers in the feather. Mike, I'm hearing about all this water that the state's letting out of Oroville, and at the same time, I'm hearing about all the stripers in the feather. That's kind of interesting news. What's going on there?
Well, I think the feather, even with the water coming up, the stripers are here. The last week or so, I've had guys catching fish just about everywhere from Mosquito Beach right up here in Yuba City all the way down to East Nicholas.
That's good news.
Yeah, I'm glad to see it. We were all getting worried a little bit here, but with this rain that's come, it's a godsend. I mean, it's going to make a big difference in the fishing.
Well, you know, of course, we just speculated on this earlier in the season, about a month or so ago, when they released all the smolts up there. And for the first time in anybody's memory, there was no stripers to sit there and feed on them.
There was nothing. It was amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, every year that we've released those smolts there, the fish have gone off on a bite. But, you know, there's such a lot of sediment in the river from last year's water flow, and there's a huge, huge bottleneck down at East Nicholas. And I got a feeling that a lot of those fish, they can't get through.
They probably could if they had to, like in a spawning run, but it's just so unnatural. I just think they said, why mess with it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, now with this water push, and actually with the water push that we had about a week and a half ago,
yeah,
it's made all the difference in the world. And I've got guys fishing all over the place, from shore and from boat, and they're doing really good.
The river is still rising, isn't it?
It is. It's going to peak tomorrow, and I think it's going to peak at around, I want to say, 45 to 50,000 CFS, and that's at Boyd's Pump. That's where that reading comes from. But then the rain's supposed to subside here, and I'm sure that once they let the bulk of this water go, that it'll come back down. And when it does, everybody better be ready, because I'm telling you, the fish are going to be hungry.
Well, there, you know, to catch fish in that high of water is pretty interesting in itself, you know. So I don't know if the peak is going to blow out the fishing for a day or two. What do you think?
Well, I got guys on the river today, and they're catching fish in this stuff.
What are they using?
They're throwing swim baits. They're trolling with, like, brightly colored yozuris,
mm-hmm,
or bombers.
Yeah.
And, of course, bait fishing. Pile worms, sardines, anchovies.
Anybody drifting minnows yet?
The minnow game hasn't got going yet. I've got guys drifting minnows, and I do have people catching fish on them, but the water is so muddy that it's kind of hard to get those minnows out there and get them in the face of the striper.
So it just, same thing happened down at river. Water was muddy, but the trollers got them anyway.
Yeah, yeah, and I could say to everybody, if you're going to be out there fishing and you're trolling lures or you're throwing swim baits, go with bright stuff. Go with really loud, rattling lures. And if you're bait fishing, get your bait, but get some bait oil and just soak that stuff in it, and they'll find your bait.
That's Mike Searcy of Johnson's Bait and Tackle. That's the Feather River's loaded with fish. I expect it to still be loaded with fish. Don't know how bad the river's going to get today, but one way to find out, right? Anyway, Mike's number, 530-674-1912. Well, last week I told you, this week I'm going to tell you again. Next, this coming Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, Camp Right, which it makes so much camping equipment that sells through various websites, from Amazon to Target to just everybody. They're a huge supplier. Well, their factory is right here in Sacramento. And I bought one of their original tent cots years ago when they first came out with them. Then I bought another one. I loved them. These are tent cots with rain flies. They're just so handy. They go up in just a couple of minutes. But anyway, here's what they're doing. With all their suppliers on all the websites, they ship things out. Well, often, as we all know, packages get damaged in shipping. Not the product inside, but the package. Well, if you get a package at your doorstep and it's all the package is all torn up, you're not going to accept it. At least I wouldn't. So they send it back, and it ends up at Camp Right here in Sacramento. They are, for the first time, having a big retail sale this coming Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And most everything they sell is going to be close to 50% off. Never mind it's 10% off stuff, 50% off. They're going to put out new inventory each day. It's not going to be the early bird gets the whole deal on Thursday. They're going to put up a whole bunch of new inventory on Friday and again on Saturday. And this includes tent cots. You know, they've got so many different kinds of sizes and doubles and compacts and kids, and they've got hammocks, 15 different models of folding chairs. You can sit in each one of them to see if it fits you. They've got lounges. They've got folding camping tables, self-inflating mattresses, sleeping bags of all kind, mild weather, heavy-duty weather, singles, doubles, with different temperature ratings. They've got regular cots. They've got all this stuff. You have to go to their website, which is campright.com. That's K-A-M-P-R-I-T-E. And all the stuff you see there, almost everything's going to be 50% off. If they run out of something, they will sell you the brand new product for 20% off. Best sale I've ever heard of in camping gear. They're at 7400 14th Avenue. They're just off Power Inn Road and Highway 50. 7400 14th Avenue, or go to campright.com. Well, today is the opening of salmon season in the ocean down by Monterey, you know, south of Pigeon Point. And earlier in the week, it was the opening of rockfish, and I talked to Chris Arcaleo of Chris's Sport Fishing in Monterey about that. Chris, the rockfish season opened up April 1st. I'm dying to know how it was.
Hey, it was fantastic. We had limits of ling cod, limits of rock cod, no live bait, just using bars and jigs and
just the good old fashioned stuff.
Exactly. Dead squid, just very, very good.
So shrimp flies, the whole works?
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful. What was the quality of the rockfish?
The first couple of days it was really good. And we had, you know, after they've been sitting around for 4 or 5 months, yeah, not being able to catch them, a lot of reds, a lot of good fish. Yesterday, mixed fish, some good ones, some medium-sized stuff. A nice ling cod, though.
Well, that's good. Like up to what, like 12, 13, 14?
Oh, we had a ling cod of 22 pounds.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
That's great, and you didn't have to go far, I would imagine.
No, we didn't go anywhere. We just went down towards Carmel. There's been wind on the outside pretty much every day, so we haven't been able to really do much with it.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing you don't have to, you know, when that
exactly
happens.
Exactly.
Well, especially after that long closure, fishing's going to be good in a lot of places.
Exactly.
So, well, that is good news. Now, let's see, your salmon season opens up tomorrow?
It opens up tomorrow.
Now,
is there anchovies in the bay?
Yeah,
and we've heard some rumors that there's an odd fish around. So, who knows? Maybe we'll have a season where, well, our season I think is only 3 weeks, but maybe we'll get a few fish.
Yeah. Well, last year, you know, it was kind of strange because the private skiffs did well because they had the downriggers and they controlling, and your party boats usually mooch.
Yeah.
And the fish just never got schooled up and stuck around for you to be successful.
It was poor for us last year, very poor. And, you know, and it was so nice. San Francisco had a great year. And
yeah.
So it was very nice for them. But for us, the salmon was very poor.
Yeah. But you know, the fact is that at least there was salmon in the area.
And, it was.
And, you know, whatever the reason, I mean, it's hard for me to figure out. Do you have an answer why? I mean, they were catching salmon there for 6 weeks, maybe 2 months. Some of these guys with the downriggers, of course, they can move around. They're constantly moving where you're mooching. You're just kind of drifting.
Well, yeah, they're getting them awful deep, and they're getting those things near the bottom, so those downriggers are just putting them right down there.
Yeah.
you know, it's about the temperature of the water. Hopefully this year we got a little colder water and the fish will be a little shallower.
So that's what you base it on?
Yeah.
Okay. So, because you usually mooch down 100, 120 feet, don't you?
Yeah, and you can mooch well at 100, 150 feet, but you can't mooch well at 300.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you got to have zero wind
right,
to do
exactly.
that.
Exactly. It is very difficult. And the problem is when you're mooching down 300 foot, you have a really hard time feeling the bite. So, you know, it's just such a difficult thing.
Yeah. So, well, we'll see what happens. So you've had some incidental catch on salmon, and I guess we'll just see what that happens. People can call you and see how the opener went, because I know if it went well, you're going to get booked in a hurry.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we've only got 3 weeks to fish, so if people want to go, they got 3 weeks to do it in.
Yeah.
So, and if we're, you know, hopefully we'll be able to get some fish.
Yeah. I hope so, too. Hey, by the way, just for whatever it's worth, just because we're so used to asking you about it, you got any whales in the area?
There's always lots of whales, yep.
That's Chris Arcaleo. Lots and lots of whales. His number, 831-375-5951. And the whales, including the last of the returning gray whales, humpbacks are all over, and this is the time of year you're going to see the most killer whales. Because they occasionally hunt an occasional gray whale. I think he said something like there was like 8 or 10 killer whales in one group out there. So you ever see that, that is a sight of a lifetime. Next hour, we'll talk about Lake Almanor, among other things.